It says in Bhagavad Gita, there's the lower inferior energy and the superior energy, para prakriti and prakriti. Prakriti are the eight elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. Right, mind, intelligence, ego. Then there's para prakriti, which is the atma, and then he's with the paramatma. So the body is composed of so many cells, and the cells are made of so many molecules and elements and atoms and all these things. So it says that the Paramatma is in every atom, because nothing can move or exist without the presence of God. But the conscious development of that atom is very less. There's not much consciousness there. So in one sense, there's only one energy. It's all spiritual. God is the origin of everything. So everything's connected to God. So everything is ultimately spiritual. But because different energies are positioned in different distances from the Lord, they appear to be conscious or unconscious, or sentient or insentient. So the body has so many elements in it, and there's Paramatma is there. And the Prabhupada even says in Life Comes From Life, there's a soul in every atom also. But there really isn't any such a thing as dead matter. It's just, it's dead in a sense, it's not showing any conscious activity. It's not showing sentience. How can anything be dead? Because God is not dead. If everything emanates from God, how can anything be dead? So everything is, you know, eternal. Everything is existing eternally. Everything has consciousness in it, but it's covered consciousness. Different levels of consciousness you can read. You'll have to read, and you will read. And Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he talks about budding consciousness, dormant consciousness. So the consciousness of a rock is not as developed as the consciousness of a tree, and the consciousness of a bird is more developed, or a reptile is more developed than a tree and a plant. And it goes, these are different bodies which reflect different developments of consciousness. So if you go to the smallest body is the element, or the atom, that's also a body. And there's a Paramatma, there's an Atma there, but the consciousness is severely covered. So it appears to be inert or insentient, or what they're saying, dead. So this, just as this sun is energy or light of the sun planet is one, and its light is spread throughout the universe, enervating and activating all the different planets. In the same way, the soul is situated in his body, and he's enervating and making this, all these elements and atoms appear to move and grow and do all these things, because he's connected with the Paramatma. So this soul is like the sun inside the planet, inside the body, and all the different cells are like planets. So there's life everywhere, and every atom is life, but it's covered. Well, Gita says that also, to understand, and we should understand there's superior and inferior energy. The inferior energy is a dull matter, which is called dead matter. And they say like that, everywhere it says, not only essence of Gita, and Gita and everywhere else. There's inferior and superior energy. Krishna himself is telling Arjuna, besides this inferior energy, there's a superior energy of mine. So then the Anandale put on columns in the Bhaktivedanta Institute publications, they put a column, quality of matter, quality of spirit. Spirit, sentient, matter, insentient. You know, matter, temporary, spirit, eternal. So there's different characteristics. But if you want to get into existential understanding, then everything is eternal. But they're just exhibiting these characteristics of temporality, because they're temporarily manifested. They combine in certain molecules, and the molecules are broken down again back into their atoms, and they combine and break down. You know, the hydrogen and oxygen combine to make water, then you boil them, and then they go into the air. Go back again and they disappear. The water is no longer there. It turns into gas. So now there's no molecule of water there anymore. The hydrogen has gone to the hydrogen into the air in it. So it's like this. They're subtle material elements, and they carry the soul from one, the mind, intelligence, and ego, the material mind, intelligence, ego, or material, and they carry the soul to the next gross body. There's also a spiritual mind and spiritual intelligence and spiritual ego. The material mind, intelligence, and ego, they're wrapped around the soul, and they carry means that these the material ideas is what carries, what delivers in material ideas, material identity. Ego means material identity, and material intelligence means material discrimination and material choices, and material mind means thinking, feeling, willing materially, separate from Krishna. These concepts or these ideas or these principles force the soul to accept another material body. But with these, the subtle body is dissolved. You can read also in Bhagavatam, the subtle body, this, what do you call it, Linga Shavir, is dissolved by Bhakti Bhajan and disappears, and then it's replenished. Then what surfaces then is the true mind, the spiritual mind, intelligence, and identity of the pure Atma that exists forever in your Sarup. Exactly, whatever you think at the time of death, Krishna says, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam. Bhava means bhava. Bhava means deep heart feelings. Now, you may think any number of crazy things. You want at the time of death, you may say, I want ice cream. It doesn't mean you become ice cream. But what is your deep-seated bhava? And basically, it's calm bhava. We have bhava for lust. We have lust to enjoy. So this calm bhava has to be replaced by seva bhava. And then seva bhava becomes specified in a particular stai rati, or in madhura rati, or sakhi rati, or vatsalya rati. That seva takes a specific shape at the level of bhava. And then we receive we contact Sarup Shakti, and then we understand what is our eternal identity in terms of spiritual relationship with Krishna. And then that becomes our stai bhava. It could be gopi bhava, or sakhi bhava. And then at the time of death, that bhava carries us to a form of a gopi. But generally, everyone's, that bhava is what you're always feeling. Basically, what we're always operating out of is a deep-seated heartfelt, core in the heart feeling. Thoughts, they come and go like waves in the ocean. So many thoughts. But there's a deep-seated bhava, which is a bhava to enjoy. And then so many thoughts emanate from that. Like the ocean is there, and so many waves emanate from it due to wind. So the ocean is the bhav, and the bhav is the desire to enjoy. It's called calm bhav. And so many waves emanate from that ocean, flow over that ocean, or come out of that ocean, which are called vasana, or desire, or thoughts. Thoughts means desires. Thinking to desire this and thinking to desire that. Accepting this desire and rejecting that desire. All on the basis of the bhav. And the bhav is, I am the enjoyer, and I want to enjoy. I accept this, reject that, accept this, reject that. So this bhava is deep. It's very, very deep, as the ocean is fathomless. It's very, very deep. Thoughts can change. Thoughts change every second a new thought comes. It's called manavritti. Every second a new thought comes, it rises in the sky, it rises in the brain and disappears. Then it rises in another one, disappears. I think I'll do this. Oh, nothing. No, I think I'm thirsty. No, I'm not. No, I'm hungry. No. I'll sit down. No, I'll sleep. Let me do this. I think I'll do this. But the basic operating principle is all, I'm the enjoyer. I think I'll enjoy this way, or I think I won't enjoy that way. I think I'll enjoy this way, or no, I think I'll enjoy this way. But this is called samsara. It's a hopeless. So that's why we have the chitta. The chitta has to be purified. Chitta dharvana marjanam. By constant chanting the holy name, then we start to rethinking, oh, I want to serve Krishna this way, I want to serve Krishna that way. And basically it goes under the order of Guru. And then he gets given us a particular order, then we think of newer and newer ways to fulfill that order and better ways. Faster and faster ways to fulfill the order, newer and newer ways and better and better ways. Then seva becomes, our bhava becomes seva. Now we have like 1% seva bhava and 99% kam bhava. Oh, what should I wear today? Oh, this looks nice. Oh, and then our mind just runs off with our bhava and we're nowhere near Krishna. Well, it's not seva. Really, we're not even doing seva. We're just practicing. Seva is only done in a swarup. This is called struggling stage. S for sadhana, S for struggle. Struggling with their material desires, gross and subtle. Desires for adoration, distinction. I did this, I did that. Oh, you sponsored the Sunday feast. Oh, you're great. Oh, make sure you put my name on a plaque. This and that. It's all kambhav. Gross and subtle. Like they say, subtle sex life. They say gross sex life, everyone knows. And subtle sex life is adoration, distinction, profit. It's all enjoyment. Me, putting me forward, and Krishna, well, he can go in the back seat. Some other question? Krishna is the enjoyer, but he doesn't take any service from us. What service can we do offer to Krishna? Yeah, he's the enjoyer. Just like you know what it means to enjoy. How is Krishna the enjoyer? You know, you take some object and then you combine that object with your senses, and then when they combine together, if it's acceptable based on your ego, then you interpret that as giving pleasure to your ego. That's because you accepted it and you possess it, and that sense of possession, that sense of acceptance stimulates certain kind of chemicals in your brain, and then you interpret that as being enjoyable. But Krishna is not like that. That's material sense enjoyment based on material energy. Krishna's praying for Purushottam, and the only thing that satisfies him is love, pure love. So we're not really serving Krishna. Like, usually what they say is that the disciple is assisting the spiritual master in his loving service to Krishna. And then even like Prabhupada said, when we pick a flower, you can see in the folio, when we pick a flower, we don't offer it directly to Krishna. We pick a flower and we put it in Radharani's hand and we say, Radharani, please offer this to your Krishna. Because you're full of love, and Krishna says that he'll accept a flower if it's offered with love. But I don't have any love. A flower means any service. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhakti prayachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatana. He says that he offers me love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, water. So it means anything. You know, from a drop of water to your life, energy, whatever you offer to Krishna has to be done with love. So then they say, well, if I don't have any love, then how? Offering means seva. Saving. Bhakti, the word bhakti, the term bhakti comes from bhaj. Bhaj means to worship or to serve or to save, to make someone pleased. So, frankly speaking, we offer to Guru. But Prabhupada is saying like that. He said, just to give the general idea, because the representative of Guru is Radharani. But it's interesting. We're trying to qualify. That's why. What do we pray to Tulsi every morning? Please say about, what do we say? You ever pray to Tulsi in the morning? What is the prayer? Seva adhikara die kor. You never know that? You never sing like that? You should sing a service. Seva adhikara die. What does that mean? Please give me the eligibility so I can seva adhikara die koro nichadasi. What is that adhikara to serve? What is that qualification to serve or do seva? Money? Intelligence? What is that qualification? I just told you last 10 minutes. It's love. It's love. I don't think you understand what I've just talked about for the last 10 minutes. So love has to be pure, unadulterated love. Ahoitaki apratiyata. No mixture. No mishra. That's what Krishna's saying. And that's in 9th chapter, 26th verse. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhakta prayachati taraham bhaktyuparitam Ashnami Prayatatmanaha. It says, Prayata Atmanaha, one in pure consciousness. Bhakti Upauritam. Bhakti Upauritam, offered with his full heart. Ritam means riddhi. Offering up of his full heart with devotion. If someone offers me like that, I accept it. Prayata Atmanaha, pure consciousness. So that's seva. Seva is done in pure consciousness with full love. Pure bhakti means only for the pleasure and satisfaction of Krishna. No calculation, no personal interest. So we're trying to gradually qualify ourselves and praying everywhere and to everyone to bless us with the adhikar to serve Krishna. Always understand the difference between imitation and following the footsteps. So you have to find what is your level, and then you follow, and you don't imitate someone else's level. Krishna's telling that in Gita, one who performs someone else's duty, even if it's perfectly done, if it's not his duty, then it's fault, it's faulty. There's a mistake there. So we have to do what we have to do, and not worry about what other people are doing so much. Curiosity killed the cat. Just like, well, I have a Gopal Yantra also, but you know, so you can, if you want to imitate, you run off and get a Gopal Yantra. But you can't even chant because, you know, like, that's an example of imitation. You see, oh, Guruji has a Gopal Yantra. I went to the store, I got one too. And someone comes in your altar, oh, what's that? Oh, Gopal Yantra. Why? Well, Guruji has one, so that's called imitation. Not following the footsteps. Well, did he give this to you? Was it installed? Did he do puja? Who installed it? Oh, I don't know about all that stuff. So, everything has its place. First of all, it's called sadhya and sadhana. You can't do sadhana unless you know the sadhya. What is it? You know what sadhya means? What is the goal? The goal is the prem seva of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Avradya Bhagavan Brijeshitaniyos Sridham Vrindavanam. And in order to serve Radha Krishna Vrindavan, what do we require? Pure consciousness and pure love. You have to think about that. So how does your consciousness become pure? The consciousness becomes pure by cheto. Chit means cheto. Cheto darpana marginam. When the consciousness is pure, then what happens? When the consciousness becomes purified, then the Swarup Shakti of Krishna actually comes down. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. The Swarup Shakti of Krishna, which is known as Bhakti Devi, the personal energy of Krishna, internal potency, Swarup Shakti, which is a combination of Samvit and Ladini, the ability to love Krishna purely, and the ability to understand Krishna, and see ourselves and see Krishna. That comes down from Krishna, Radharani, or Lita, Vishaka, Rupamandri. It comes down through Guru Parampara, and it mixes with our purified heart, and then we realize our eternal identity and our Swarup, and then we begin to serve Krishna in pure love. So this is the sadhya, this is the conclusion of Krishna consciousness, which is available to anyone who seriously takes our Krishna consciousness in this lifetime. In one lifetime you can attain this perfection. There's a sadhya, sadhya and sadhana. Sadhya is a goal. You have to be very clear about what is the goal of Krishna consciousness. What is Krishna consciousness? What is the goal? What is it? You go into college and they say, what are you here for? Oh, I'm just hanging out, studying this and that. If you engage in some activity, someone will say, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? What is the purpose? What is the end result? What do you want to accomplish by this? Oh, I'm just passing my time. It makes me feel good. I get a good feeling from it. So then then you have to understand what is required to reach the goal. What's required to reach the goal? Adho sharatata sarasanga bhajana kriya narta nivriti. So if you... and that's called confidence. That's all nectar of instruction. You need faith, confidence, take proper initiation, begin bhakti bhajan, and then you go through an arta nivriti, you gradually get purified, You can see in the Bhagavatam, there's a whole series of verses. I think it's in the first canto, chapter 2. All these verses about the, that it starts off with Nasya Priyeshu, Bhadreshu. Verse 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. And then read the purports. Basically that 22 you could also do. And that explains how you come from out of ignorance to passion of goodness and pure goodness, and you realize yourself, become self-realized, which means pure consciousness. And it's all very systematic. It's very systematic. There's no guesswork. It's not maybe, shouldn't think you're going to become purified. Don't become proud. Just be humble and always remain contaminated and in illusion. That's not our teaching at all. Our teaching is positive and progressive. And you can measure your step. Every step of the way, you can measure how you're going. There's six symptoms of anishchita bhakti, or 11 symptoms of anishchita bhakti, the anishchita bhakti. So in the level of an artanivrti in bhajana kriya, then it's called anishchita, not steady, it's not nishta. And I discussed those so many times in bhajana rahasyam also. And then you remove your doubts. You have to remove your doubts, and then you can become firm in bhakti. Study more. But your question is, how does a mother get detached from her children? Well, everything goes by everything. It's not a matter of going. Prabhupada never said we're not merging in Brahman. We're not nihilistic. We're not Buddhist. Attachment is the nature of the soul. The soul is meant to be attached. Is naturally attached, just as the soul is attached to the body. So, and the soul has a natural attachment to Krishna. We're part and parcel of Krishna, so we can't help but be attached to Him. So that now it's due to ignorance that we're attached to all these other bodies, except we're not attached to the body of Krishna. It's misplaced mamta, our sense of possession. We feel that I and mine, it's called ahamamati. I and this body and all these bodies related to me are mine. This is illusion. So when we come out of illusion, that's the same. You'll see in those verses, the progress is there. When you come out of illusion, you'll see in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, those verses and purports are very good. They're really like the summary. Basically what those verses are telling what they're the basis of the teaching of Rupa Goswami. The different stages that are actually told there in those verses. Nashta Priyesha Bhadresha Nityam Bhagavata. So hearing and chanting, then you get purified and like that. So they're very good. And Krishna, he purifies the consciousness. As soon as you become steady, like this canto 1, chapter 2, verse 19, that's describing nishta. And that verse says, as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, that means nishta. The effects of nature's mode of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. So this attachment to family is ignorance. So when ignorance disappears, then you say, wait a minute, all the children are my children, and I'm a child myself. Devotees establishing goodness becomes completely happy. So this is stitam, this is nishta. And then the verse 18, that's anartanivrti. By regular attendance and class in Bhagavatam, and by rendering service, all that's troublesome to the heart, says abhadreshu. Inauspicious things. So this is called anartanivrti. Anarta is inauspicious things. So by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and serving the pure devotee, all your anarthas go. And then you come to nishta. So it's like this. And then the first... Yeah, the same. Adoshadata Sadasanga is not... I mean, the basis is Bhagavatam. All the Goswami's books are based on the Bhagavatam. So Shinvatam Swakata Krishna, that's verse 1-2-17. That's explaining now hearing Harikata, then how it works, how Krishna purifies the heart. He does it from inside. It's a beautiful selection of verses. And then you get Rati, and then you get Prema, everything is there. Sadhana means struggle. That's S for sadhana, S for struggle. Struggle with the mind, struggle with the senses, struggle with the body, struggle with the environment. That's sadhana. There's so many problems. It's not that when you become a devotee, there's no more problems. You just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But the thing is, we're facing problems, and our Shastra said we should accept our problems as austerities. Whatever problems come to us, we accept as austerity. And by tolerating that problem and turning to Krishna and continuing to serve Him, then eventually those problems disappear. And there's no more problems. We can actually say no problem, like they say in India. No problem. But the materialists, you can't say that materialists don't have problems. The sense enjoyers have so many problems, and they keep going. That's one thing we can learn from the materialists. Devotees can learn from the materialists how, in the face of so many problems, they keep on going. They keep going and going and going. They never quit and say, oh, there's so many problems, I'm going to quit Krishna consciousness. I'm going to quit material life. There's too many problems, too many bills, too many difficulties, too many hardships. They ever quit? They never quit. But what happens, they face so many problems, and then they conquer them, or they're conquered by them, and then they face so many more problems, and so many more problems, and the problems never stop, and the hardship never stops. And what happens? They meet with defeat. Apavargasya. And then they take another birth and meet more problems. So someone will say, oh, devotees also have hardship, they also face problems. Yes, we face problems, but there's less and less problems, and eventually there's no more problems, there's no more birth and death. And problems are only faced in anartanivrti. When one comes to asakti and bhava, then there's actual bliss. There's actual bliss, devotee experience bliss, and the problems, even if some prabdha comes or Krishna arranges some difficulty, he doesn't affect him. And eventually there's no more problems, but the materialist, he faces problems and they never stop. The problems never stop for the materialist. But for devotee, problems come, but because he's doing sadhana bhajan, eventually they don't come anymore. And mostly problems come in anartanivrti, because we're battling with the lower modes of nature. Lust and greed and ignorance and passion. But the materialist is always battling with the modes of nature. He never comes out, because he has no means to come out. He has no way to come out. He's just riding the waves of ignorance and passion, sometimes up, sometimes down, sometimes on his face, sometimes standing, sometimes crushed. And it goes on forever, samsara chakra. But the devotee's suffering, there's light at the end of the tunnel. And he sees that light, because he comes out from anartanivrti, he comes to the level of nishta. And he says, wow, such relief, such peace, such happiness. Well, I can't imagine what waits me as I go further, as I become more purified in consciousness and more attached to Krishna. I laugh at all these foolish attachments and minuscule problems I was facing before, that they're way behind me now. The road is clear, clear sailing. They say that anartanivrti is like the vast intermediate zone. It's like you're dropped in the middle of the ocean, you're swimming. And then when you come to nishta, you can see the shore. You actually see the other side. And then you get so excited. There's no more. But in anartanivrti, you only see water all around. Ocean in front and back, everywhere water, no land in sight, and all clouds overhead and lightning, and alligators and crocodiles in the water. And as you get close to the safe harbor, then the sun starts to shine, the wind dies down, there's no more lightning, and the water gets shallow. You can start to touch the bottom with your feet, and you start walking through the water, and you say, wow. There's no more alligators, no more whales, no more crocodiles, no more sharks. Home, sweet home. A home is in front of me. I guess the prospect becomes very tasty. You can taste it even before you touch it. And material things, you can't taste them until you touch them. And spiritually, you can taste just by the prospect. You can taste it as you approach it. What to speak of when you embrace it, how much taste and pleasure and satisfaction will be there. The ultimate fulfillment of the soul, search for perfection.